KFSK's Midday Magazine for Wednesday, July 20th. I'm Angela Denning. Alaska delegates at the Republican National Convention say their votes for president were miscounted last night due to what they say is a misinterpretation of state rules, and as a matter of principle, the Alaskans got pretty mad. Alaska Public Radio's Washington, D.C. correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Here's how State Party Chairman Tuckerman Babcock reported Alaska's vote on the floor of the convention.
Alaska, we proudly vote exactly the way the people of Alaska voted. 12 votes for Cruz, 11 votes for Trump, 5 votes for Marco Rubio.
And here's how the convention's secretary recorded it.
Alaska, 28 votes, Trump.
It was a total surprise to the Alaskans that they'd all be counted as Trump delegates. Even the Trump supporters among them didn't think it was fair. Anchorage delegate Dave Donley took to the mic to object from the floor. Here's a very hoarse Donley explaining why it got so heated.
We represent the tens of thousands of Alaskans that voted in our preferential primary. Our duty is that their votes are honored and their votes are recorded. And they refuse to allow us to do that.
Proceedings were halted for 20 minutes. Convention functionaries were dispatched to poll the Alaskans individually. But the RNC is still recording all 28 Alaska delegates for Trump. It's a dispute that turns on the interpretation of state party rules. Those rules say if candidates drop out before the national convention, their delegates go to the remaining candidate. But Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio only suspended their campaigns. The RNC at the convention is saying suspend is the same thing as drop out. While Donley was lodging his complaint on the floor, Babcock went backstage and protested to a lawyer for the Republican National Committee, to no avail. The state party chairman says the RNC sprung it on them out of the blue.
It is very disappointing that there wasn't the communication. I know they're very busy. They have a lot going on. But Alaskans came a long way to play our part in this great convention and to have our votes unilaterally reorganized was not appropriate.
Babcock says this was about respecting Alaska's rules and votes, not an effort to deny Donald Trump the nomination. Trump won the nomination with hundreds of delegates to spare. Reporting from Cleveland, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And KFSK will be broadcasting the Republican National Convention again today, starting at 4 p.m. A group of 100 yachters recently visited Petersburg and other southeast towns. They were traveling in a fleet of Nordhavn yachts. They gathered here in Petersburg to exchange notes on living life aboard. The first one I meet on the 57-foot yacht Albedos is Izzy, a small tan poodle. Izzy's life, along with her owner's, has been completely tailored for living on the water. Here on the back deck, she has her very own small patch of bright green fake grass in the corner.
If you'll notice, the whole thing drains to the boat drain in the corner of the poop deck.
That's Jim France, the boat's owner.
Yeah, and then we've also got the automatic washing machine for the poopy pad.
And that's Linda, Jim's wife.
You see the lanyard that ties onto the grass in the tray? Well, if things start getting a little stinky out here, whoosh, over the side it goes.
Boat living is about making a small space fit your needs. The Albedos is a fiberglass boat, but inside it's all wood trimmed. There are two staterooms, each with its own shower. The galley is customized down to the color of zip ties on matching coffee mugs. The red one is Jim's, and the blue one's Linda's.
Jim's done a lot of little things. Kind of adapted this wine rack thing to hang in so it doesn't take up room. And he made this little cup holder, so that's not taking room.
Efficiency is key.
Things are tight on a boat. You don't have, you know, a lot of room. And even this lovely boat, you got to make everything count.
The Albedos is one of 30 Nordhavn yachts docked in Petersburg's harbors. This one is just a year old, costing $1.4 million.
And we make our own water from salt water, so we've got a desalination plant on the boat. We've got a central vacuum system. Linda insisted on that.
You can stand up in the engine room.
Yes, we can stand up in our engine room, so it's nice for...
The couple appreciates the yacht's creature comforts. 47 years ago, they got engaged on a canoe. Then they honeymooned in an open boat in Canada's San Juan Islands. Linda called it primitive.
It was cold, windy, and wet, and there was no cover on the boat, no head. We had a little Primus stove.
But even after decades of boating together, they won't say that they've fine-tuned their program.
Really, if you were to cruise with us, you'd really kind of wonder about the teamwork.
Yeah, we're both firstborns. Yeah, we each have ideas.
So who's the captain?
Oh, I'd say
You're pointing at each other.
Yes.
The boat is made for long voyages with a range of 5,000 nautical miles. The pilot room is full of computers for navigating, which suits Jim just fine. He's a retired commercial pilot. But Linda likes to take the wheel, too.
The draw for me is being out and the kayaking and the simplicity.
Yeah, the way I like to explain it is imagine a little Forest Service cabin up in the woods that you like to visit when, you know, you have time. Well, this is a cabin that you just take with you wherever you go. So you can get the cabin set up to be a little more comfortable than that Forest Service cabin.
Jim knows they're not alone. The group of visiting yachters rented out Petersburg's Sons of Norway Hall for 3 days to share their experiences.
Many who have crossed oceans, in our case, you know, the West Coast, we've cruised about 30,000 miles up here, over 30,000 miles.
There will be workshops covering how to cruise Prince William Sound, to organizing your galley, to how to tune stabilization fins.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hi. Well,
inside the hall, tables are set with blue tablecloths accented with wooden sailboat centerpieces. Douglas Cochran greets fellow yachters.
We're having our icebreaker party tonight to get to know everybody, and then tomorrow and Sunday will be classes, so it's going to be just a great deal of fun.
You know, what's the first thing that you guys want to talk about when you meet?
Oh, where have you been? Caught any fish lately? You know, what are your plans for the next year? Where are you spending the winter?
Cochran has been living on a 57-foot yacht with his wife for 8 years, since their retirement. He used to race sailing boats in Oregon.
We used to be sailors, but as we got older, it wasn't as much fun standing out in the rain and the cold. So.
Since retiring, they've covered 20,000 miles and 14 countries by boat. He helped come up with the idea of getting Nordhavn owners together.
The thing about this kind of lifestyle is that we're totally independent, but we're also totally responsible. We create our own water, we create our own electricity, we have our own sewage system, and we have to store food for, you know, months at a time sometimes because you don't get close to big markets. So you have to be responsible for your own existence. But on the other hand, if you don't like your neighbors, you pull your anchor and leave, so go someplace else.
Petersburg is someplace else to these yachters. And although it's sunny and warm outside, some of them are already talking about wintering their boats right here. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning. The Hainesboro is telling residents in certain areas of town to boil their water before drinking it. The boil water notice went out after problems with the public water system Sunday and Monday. The borough's main water supply was blocked, and storage tanks drained so low that some neighborhoods were left with brown water or dry taps. KHNS's Emily Files has more about the issues that led to the boil notice.
On Sunday afternoon, Fort Seward resident Merrill Loudon drove to the Mud Bay Spring to get 8 gallons of drinking water.
Do you usually get your drinking water from here?
Oh, no, not usually. I'm lazy. I don't like to haul water. If I don't have to, I'm running out the tap, you know, which is wonderful.
Loudon first heard about the water problems when she went to the Pilot Light restaurant Sunday morning. Restaurant owner Eric Forrester says he was preparing for the brunch rush when he noticed something different about the tap water.
Yeah, it came out incredibly brown. Super dark, almost looked like coffee.
It got down low in the tanks where a lot of sediment is sat, and so while there's nothing really wrong with it, it just doesn't taste good and it's not pleasant to drink.
That's Public Facilities Director Brad Ryan. He and other public works staff were at Lily Lake Sunday trying to figure out what was wrong with the pipe that supplies water from the lake to the treatment plant. Efforts that afternoon to clear the line of an apparent airlock weren't successful, and the borough put water restrictions in place. Then...
we had a big step forward last night, finally, at about 8:30. We think we sucked some of the air out of the line and prevented some of the airlock. So it's flowing pretty good right now, but not as good as we'd like.
On Monday, Ryan said they were letting the water that was getting through flow to the treatment plant to try to replenish the reserves. The Lily Lake supply is being supplemented by Crystal Cathedral's well water, also known as Wellfield, which is a backup source for the borough.
And right now we're making water. With Wellfield, we think we're pumping out about 400,000 gallons a day, which is about 50,000 gallons more than we think we'll use in a day, especially if we can keep this water restriction on. And so we're trying to catch up. And then if we do, tomorrow we'll go to hopefully make some more improvements on the water line.
Ryan says another reason the water store is drained so low is because the Tower Road tank is out of commission. The borough is waiting on a state permit for a tank roof replacement. Normally, that container provides a buffer for the municipal system to draw on. Ryan says the borough has also been trying to avoid funneling Crystal Cathedral's well water into town because the lower water quality can impact businesses. Last month, the Haines Brewery expressed concern when the borough used well water, saying it affects their product.
So we've really been playing this kind of game to try to keep people in better water so they can stay in business and be happier at their houses, and draw this tank down lower, but this hiccup is now a greater impact, obviously, because we were running our tanks lower. So now we've turned Wellfield back on, and that is, we're going to have to live with it.
Using Lily Lake and the Crystal Cathedral's well, Ryan hopes to get the water supply back up to the safe zone. A burn ban was put in effect this weekend, partly because of the dwindling water stores. Ryan said Monday afternoon that some residents on Highland Drive, Young Road, and Bjornstad Street were still without water. He said borough staff were working to get service to those areas as soon as possible. Forrester at the Pilot Light said they've been using bottled water for everything since Sunday.
So we had to go and use bottled water for sanitation, for bleach buckets, and washing hands, and it was bad.
A water use restriction was still in place Monday afternoon for municipal water customers. That means people should refrain from things like watering lawns, washing vehicles, or other non-essential uses. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
The Canadian Navy landed in Ketchikan last week. The HMCS Whitehorse was in Alaska's first city on a goodwill visit. KRBD's Leila Carey took a media tour and has this story.
A big, white, obviously military ship is tied up at the Ketchikan shipyard, but it's not there for dry dock work. Her Majesty's Canadian ship Whitehorse is just here for a visit and to welcome visitors on board. CO Shane Denany welcomed us and showed us around the ship.
We're what we call a maritime coastal defense vessel. There are 12 of us in the Canadian Royal Canadian Navy, split evenly between both coasts, between Halifax and Esquimalt or Victoria.
The approximately 180-foot Whitehorse was commissioned in 1998, and Denany says it was designed for a variety of tasks, from minesweeping and rescue to counter-narcotics. For that last task in particular, the ship has some firepower.
250-caliber machine guns is sort of the main armament for the vessel right now, which works fine for the constabulary role that it's usually employed in when it's doing sort of the counter-narcotics mission in off Central America. And obviously there's no real need for them at home.
One would hope not.
A counter-narcotics mission was a big part of the ship's activities over last fall and winter. It was a collaborative effort with other countries' militaries, including the U.S., and on that mission...
we were credited with either interdictions or disruptions of approximately 9,800 kilograms of cocaine. Two of our other sister ships have just participated. They came back about 2 months ago, and they had comparable success.
Denany says that ships smuggling drugs vary in size. Some carry up to 1,000 kilos of drugs. Self-propelled semi-submersible boats can carry up to 7,000 kilos. But Denany says he hasn't seen one of those yet.
If you get to interdict an SPSS, you're really lucky because they're really hard to find. And there's not, they're out there, but
they're hard to track and hard to find. So it's usually by gosh or by golly that you come across one of those.
Denany says collaboration like that used in the counter-narcotics missions has become an integral part of international military operations.
And, you know, I think as you see the security environment in the world continue to evolve, collaboration is the way forward. I don't think anybody has the skills, the capability, or the breadth to manage the circumstances all on their own.
In addition to welcoming the public on board while in Ketchikan, the White Horse crew will have some shore leave.
We've got a lot of people on board that have never been to sea before, so this is their first experience, and they've never been to Alaska, so this is awesome that they get to experience the state.
Denany says his crew is a blend of part-time reservists and active duty members.
It's a good group of people from all across Canada, from Newfoundland to British Columbia. Good, about 25-30% of the crew is female. So, yeah, a good mix of Canadians from coast to coast.
The White Horse has a current crew of 45 and can carry up to 47. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
The White Horse and its crews was in Ketchikan through Monday. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.